This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Mid-December marked a surprising anniversary, 10 years since Indiana's last execution. Matthew Eric Rinkles was put to death at the Indiana State Prison in Michigan City by lethal injection on December 11th, 2009, for the 1994 murders of his wife, brother-in-law, and sister-in-law. Since then, the lengthy but typical appeals process, as well as a lack of access to acceptable execution methods, have delayed the final walks of Indiana's death row inmates. This hour, we'll explore the current state of the death penalty in Indiana and efforts to abolish it here, just as 21 other states have, including neighboring Illinois and Michigan. This hour, we want to hear from you. Should Indiana keep the death penalty? Should we get rid of it? Why? Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a quick voicemail at 866-476-3881. Again, that's 866-476-3881. Be sure to include your first name and where you're calling from, and we'll get your comment in front of our live panel later on in the show. Right now, we're joined by Indianapolis Star reporter Crystal Hill, who marked the 10-year anniversary of the Matthew Rinkles execution with an article on the current state of capital punishment in Indiana. Crystal Hill, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Your article centers on the son of a woman who was murdered more than 30 years ago. This was a case that's known by some as the Shoney's murders. Can you tell us what happened?
Sure. So Eric Holmes worked at the Shoney's restaurant in Castleton, along with Charles Irvin, Teresa Blossel, and Amy Foshi. And he had gotten into some kind of disagreement with Amy Foshi, and he ended up getting fired. And on November 15th, 1989, that was when he was fired. He came back later that night and attacked the three people, Irvin, Blossel, and Foshi. He ended up stabbing three of them, killing Blossel and Irvin. And Foshi was seriously injured, but she survived. And he was with two others that night. And so it just kind of stemmed from this altercation, and he ended up taking two lives that night.
And Teresa Blossel's son, Aaron Crowley, was just 5 months old at the time of the murders. He was three when Eric Holmes was sentenced to death. Eric Holmes is still alive and on death row. What did Aaron have to say when you talked to him?
Basically, he feels that justice has not been done. Holmes was tried and convicted and sentenced, and he feels like almost in a way that the case is still open because, you know, Holmes has not yet been put to death. And he also feels like the fact that Holmes is still alive in a way is kind of keeping him from closure because, you know, the state gave him this result, you know, this they promised this punishment to him, and he feels like because this was the outcome of the case, justice won't be done until the execution is carried out.
And since Eric Holmes was sentenced to death, and again, the execution hasn't been carried out, Teresa Blossel's parents have passed away without seeing the execution take place. What did Blossel's sister, Mary Victory, say about that fact?
She said that she felt robbed, and she feels like her parents should have been alive to see it. Like Aaron, she feels like, you know, she's still kind of waiting for justice, waiting for closure, waiting to be done with the case. I mean, Blossel was 20 when she died. Aaron was just, you know, 5 months old. But Mary Victory was, I believe she was a young adult at the time. And so she has always been, you know, fully aware of what is supposed to happen and has been waiting, you know, for more than 20 years of her adult life for this punishment to be carried out. And so she feels like the state almost kind of took something from her by not doing it quickly enough.
Do we have any idea when Eric Holmes might be put to death?
There are no executions scheduled, according to the DOC. I could not get any real timeline as far as when they expect to begin executions. There are three men out of the eight men on death row who have exhausted all their appeals, and Holmes is actually not one of them. So even if things do start back up again, it's unclear when Holmes will actually be executed.
How many prisoners are currently on Indiana's death row?
Eight men, including one man whose execution has been stayed. due to mental incompetency.
As I understand it, there are two main factors that have contributed to the delays in execution in Indiana and elsewhere. And first is the lengthy appeals process. Can you kind of explain what that means?
Yeah. So when someone is sentenced to die, their case is automatically appealed directly to the Indiana Supreme Court. And that's, again, that's automatic. And so that's like kind of the first phase. And then there is a state post-conviction review where the state can review the case to see if there's any issues with maybe evidence or ineffective counsel. And then there's you can appeal at the federal level as well to sort of explore whether your civil rights were violated or, you know, if there was some kind of amendment violation in your case. And it seems like, you know, just a few steps, but attorneys have told me that that can take at least 10 years. Of course, there are still men on death row who are going through this appeals process who were convicted over a decade ago. So it can take a long time.
And the second factor, and the one that has gotten a lot more attention in recent years, is the simple fact that there just aren't as many drugs available to facilitate the most common form of execution in the modern age, which is lethal injection, which is what we use in Indiana. Can you explain why that is?
Yeah, I was told by the DOC that, you know, the state uses a 3-drug cocktail, but the suppliers that I guess the DOC has relied on has not been fulfilling their requests for these drugs. And when I spoke to Attorney General Hill, he said that he believes that pressure has been put on pharmaceutical companies to not supply these drugs, to not have their drugs be used for executions. And when I spoke to an expert, he said that, you know, pharmaceutical companies don't want to be associated with the death penalty, that, you know, it's not so much outside pressure, but that these companies themselves just don't want their drugs being used for those purposes.
And then there's simply the change in public opinion around the death penalty, which I think has motivated that among pharmaceutical companies. You spoke with the chief federal public defender, Monica Foster. What did she tell you about the influence of juries in capital cases?
Yeah, I mean, she said that, I believe her exact words were, there's just not much of an appetite for it. When the government files it, juries aren't convicting. They're instead going for, you know, mandatory life, or I'm sorry, life without parole, and, you know, simply going for lengthy prison sentences and not the death penalty. And so she said, you know, we're just not seeing people get sentenced to death at the rate that, you know, offenders were 10, even 20 years ago. A lot of attorneys I spoke to for this story, including Foster, were, you know, surprised that there are only 8 men on death row. You know, I believe when Holmes was convicted and sentenced to die, he was joining more than 40 people. So we've seen, you know, the amount of offenders on death row go down greatly, and we're just not seeing as many people get that sentence.
And there is movement in Indiana among some people. We'll hear from State Senator Lonnie Randolph himself later in the show. He's the minority whip in the state Senate. He has moved to abolish the death penalty. What has he said about it?
He said that the death penalty, he doesn't believe it serves any purpose. You know, he said it's a lot of time, it's a lot of money, it's a lot of resources. You know, we're now at this point where there's been no movement. People are kind of waiting indefinitely. And he also said that he doesn't, you know, believe that it's a deterrent to crime, that it doesn't, you know, really play any role in, you know, reducing violent crime, you know, murders. It doesn't have anything to do with, you know, the murder rate. And so it doesn't really serve any real purpose in society. And so he thinks that, you know, we should just do away with it.
What has the Attorney General, Curtis Hill, said about the death penalty?
So he said he does believe that it still does serve an appropriate purpose. You know, he said that if we can figure out how to streamline it, you know, make it more efficient, figure out a way to, you know, carry out these executions in a more timely manner to give that closure to victims who want, you know, to see this punishment carried out, then it can still serve a purpose in our society. And he noted that, you know, the death penalty is not something that's just given out for simply just for a murder. I mean, all murder is awful, but, you know, it has to reach a certain standard for that to be an option. And so he said that that should still be something that the state considers in some murder cases.
So part of the delay is, of course, the execution method. And we'll go back to that here. Why not just entertain other methods of execution in Indiana?
Well, according to an expert I spoke with, the legislature here would have to decide on a method that is practical, that is palatable to the public. It has to be something that hasn't been, you know, disputed in the past. There have been certain methods that have been decried for, you know, cruel and unusual punishment and has faced, you know, legal challenges for that. And so there's not a lot of options, you know, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. I believe some states have explored using a type of gas, but, you know, not everybody is okay with, you know, killing someone with gas. You know, there's electric chair, which we've gotten away from. You know, past methods are seen as barbaric, are seen as, you know, just kind of not something that we as a civilized society want to see. And so the difficulty is deciding on a method and, you know, having, you know, people who I guess are for the death penalty be okay with that method. And it's definitely not an easy decision, I think, to make or an easy agreement to come to. So.
And so that brings us back to Aaron Crawley, who is the son of Teresa Blossel, who was murdered in November of 89 and whose convicted killer, Eric Holmes, is still on death row. In the last 30 seconds or so that we have, what has Aaron said about the death penalty?
He does believe that the death penalty should still be an option. You know, he thinks that if you decide to take a life, that is a consequence that you should face. He was of the opinion that, you know, people staying in jail, people serving life sentences, that can be a strain on taxpayers. And so he believes that, you know, if you make that decision to, you know, to murder someone, then that should be something that you face. And I believe that Mary Victory also had a similar take on it to where she believes that, you know, if that's what you do, then you should pay the price.
Crystal Hill from the Indianapolis Star, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
We're talking about the death penalty today, as last month Indiana marked 10 years without an execution. Up next, we'll bring in Robert Dunham from the Death Penalty Information Center for some facts about the death penalty, like how Indiana compares to the rest of the country. And we'll hear from State Senator Lonnie Randolph, who's introduced measures to abolish the death penalty in Indiana. And we want to know what you think about capital punishment. Is it justice? Is it a deterrent for serious crimes? Let us know on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or record a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. And we'll get it in front of our live panel this hour. I'm Matt Pelser. Back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Before we get back to our conversation on capital punishment in Indiana, if you'd prefer some lighter fare, yesterday we talked about Indiana's libraries and how they're changing with the times. And we heard about some curious choices being made as to what libraries can and should be now and in the future. You can find that among our podcasts. Just search for All In and look for our blue and black logo. Today we're talking about the death penalty, as Indiana just marked 10 years since our last execution in mid-December. But surprisingly, we're not the most recent state to hit that milestone. We'll get to that in just a moment. But if you have questions or comments about the death penalty, we have a great live panel with us for the rest of the hour who will be able to help us out. Joining me via Skype is Executive Director of the Death Penalty Information Center, Robert Dunham. Robert, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And in studio is Democratic State Senator Lonnie Randolph, who represents Senate District 2 in northwestern Indiana. Senator Randolph, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
And this is a hot topic with strong opinions on both sides. And indeed, we've already heard from some of you. We would encourage you to share those opinions with us this hour. Keep it civil, of course, but we'd really love to hear from you. Are you for or against the death penalty? Why? Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. and we'll get your comment or question in front of our panel today. Again, 866-476-3881 or All In Indiana on Facebook or Twitter. Robert Dunham, we heard something in the last segment that I want to touch on right off the bat, this thought that the death penalty saves money by not having to keep an inmate alive in prison for the rest of their life. I think there are far more important things to talk about this hour than the cost, but is that even the case?
No, it's not the case. In fact, every state in which a study has been done has shown that a system of justice that has the death penalty as the ultimate punishment costs more than a system where the ultimate punishment is life without parole or a long prison term.
And so we mentioned at the top of the segment that Indiana just marked 10 years since our last execution. We were the 11th state with capital punishment on the books to hit that milestone. But yesterday, another state, just yesterday, became the 12th. What state was that?
That was Louisiana.
And so 12 states with capital punishment on the books that haven't used it in over 10 years, but there are a number of states that have abolished it altogether. How many states don't use the death penalty?
Well, there are now 33 states, that's two-thirds of the United States, that have either abolished the death penalty altogether or haven't carried out an execution in more than a decade. And what we've seen is that this is an ongoing trend. There's going to be another state, Utah, that joins the list of death penalty states without executions in a decade. That'll happen in June. We're already at the point with the 12 death penalty states that haven't carried out executions, where 41% of the states that have the death penalty have not carried it out in more than a decade. And nine states have repealed the death penalty this century.
How many states, or are there any states, that have always had the death penalty off the books? No death penalty in that state?
Well, There have been states in the modern era, if we consider the death penalty coming back in the 1950s, in the 1970s, there have been some states, but the death penalty always existed in the colonies, we had Michigan and Wisconsin in the 1800s leading the way in abolition. The only states in the United States that have never had the death penalty are Alaska and Hawaii, which didn't have it when they joined the Union.
So ignoring the 10-year statistic that we just became a part of in Indiana, 10 years without an execution, though we still have the death penalty on the books, what are some of the most recent states to actually take measures to abolish the death penalty?
New Hampshire is the latest. New Hampshire abolished the death penalty just last year, overriding a gubernatorial veto. And before that, New Hampshire was the last state in New England and basically the Mid-Atlantic, the only state left in the Northeast that has the death penalty is Pennsylvania, and they have a moratorium. This century, we've had Maryland, Delaware, New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, just run up the list of the East Coast who have abolished the death penalty. And in 2018, the Washington State Supreme Court declared its death penalty statute unconstitutional.
Madison on Twitter says, I am against the death penalty in almost all cases. I find it inhumane, and being held on death row for years or decades feels cruel and unusual. That said, she goes on to say, I do believe there are times when it is the only fitting punishment. She cites serial killers as an example. Senator Lonnie Randolph, we mentioned New Hampshire being the most recent state to abolish the death penalty. Here in Indiana, you have introduced measures to do the same. How many times?
At least twice, maybe three times.
So three times. A few attempts. When was your first attempt? When did you do that first?
Oh, it's been about maybe five, six years ago. It's an issue. Well, death penalty is personal with me, personal in the sense that that's my view, period, that it should be abolished. It should be abolished, in my view, for three reasons. One is a religious reason. Two is for moral reasons. And one is punitive. It's punitive. When you talk about the death penalty in terms of religion, if you're very religious, one of the 10th commandments is what thou shalt not kill. So are we being hypocritical by supporting the death penalty? I don't know. I think we are. then you, when you talk about morality, well, you either talk about right or wrong. Is it right to take another human being's life, or is it wrong? I think it's wrong. That's morality. And talking about punitive, well, if you want to punish an individual, we have a state constitution that we as resident citizens and people who abide by in the state of Indiana, and that constitution says when it comes to punishment, we should be, it's written in the state constitution, Article 1, Section 18, said we should be about reforming an individual, not vindictiveness. And so if, in fact, we support the death penalty, then we don't support that aspect of our state constitution. I got an issue with that.
Marty from Facebook says, abolish the death penalty like many other states and countries have done. It's not a deterrent. Much more money is spent on death penalty cases, and innocent people are executed based on the number of people proven innocent by DNA, et cetera. Life without parole should be the penalty instead. Senator Randolph, one of the arguments for the death penalty is that it's a deterrent against the worst of crimes. And you have said that that simply isn't true. What makes you say that?
No, it's not. Based on my experience, I'm a lawyer, and I've been a lawyer now for close to 40 years, and I've tried an awful lot of cases. I've had a death penalty case before. And death penalty, in terms of as a punishment, is not a deterrent in terms of crimes. When you look at the statistics, and if Robert, I don't know whether you've got information concerning this or not, and I'm assuming that based upon the time that the statistics that you cited, that you spent an awful lot of time in reference to this issue, and you probably got some records that support the fact that it's not a deterrent in terms of death penalty to crime. Otherwise, we no longer have any crimes. The crimes will be going down instead of going up. The crimes in Chicago have been going up in terms of murder cases. The murder case in Northwest Indiana and Gary, we've had like 58 murders last year as opposed to what they had before, even though I'm from East Chicago, but it's right next to Gary and everything. And so we've had an increase in rate. Look at what's happening in Baltimore and everything. And so when you look at the statistics themselves, if you want to look at the numbers, then that does not support that argument. That is a deterrent in terms of from crime.
Director Dunham? That's right. Yeah, we actually did a study. We took a look at 30 years of FBI data, and the reason we chose 30 years was because that's how long the FBI has been collecting information on killings of police officers. And we thought that if the death penalty is a deterrent, then that's a powerful reason to keep it. And if it makes police safer, that's also a powerful reason to keep it. When we looked at the numbers, we saw that from 1987 onward, every year the murder rates on average were higher in states that had the death penalty than in states that didn't. And the national trends, when you take a look at them, when murder rates went up nationally, they went up in both death penalty states and non-death penalty states. When they went down nationally, they dropped in both. It turns out that the death penalty has no relationship to the murder rates. And when we looked at the police killings, we found the same thing as well. Police killings are greater in states that have the death penalty than in states that don't. The most interesting fact was that the lowest rates of police killings were in states that had most recently abolished the death penalty. And that's not because you do away with the death penalty and police officers suddenly become safer. It's that the murder rates have nothing to do the death penalty has nothing to do with making police safer. But when there are fewer police murders, that becomes less of a political issue, and the legislature begins to concentrate on the practical issues of whether the death penalty actually works. And when you take the emotional aspects of police killings out of the picture, it makes it much easier for states to then go ahead and abolish the death penalty.
We're talking about capital punishment in Indiana with Executive Director of the Death Penalty Information Center, Robert Dunham, and State Senator Lonnie Randolph. And we have some voicemails from listeners. Again, you can call 866-476-3881 to leave us a voicemail. Here's one from Benjamin with his thoughts.
My name is Benjamin from Cedar Lake, Indiana, and I believe they should keep the death penalty. In fact, I think they should publicize it.
Senator Randolph, how do you I guess what we're missing there is the why. And I think that, well, I guess Executive Director Dunham, what is the why for so many people who are pro-death penalty? What are some of the more common reasons that we hear that people want to keep the death penalty on the books?
Well, there are a number of reasons. A number of them are mistaken, though. The one we hear the most often is the death penalty should be kept because it will keep people from committing killings. And the facts just show there is no relationship between murder rates and the death penalty. The death penalty is not a deterrent. The second that we hear is cost, and that's also an incorrect argument. I think the one that that you can't argue with in terms of facts is that there are some murders that are just so bad that no other punishment seems to be appropriate. That raises a different type of issue, which is the death penalty as applied, is it reserved for the worst of the worst? And we've seen a significant decline in the use of capital punishment over the course of the last 20 years. And the hope was that as the death penalty got used less, it would be reserved for the crimes that people tend to call the worst of the worst. The facts, however, have really undercut that argument. In the last year, there were 22 people who were executed. And 19 of those 22, the evidence showed significant evidence of serious mental illness, intellectual disability, chronic exposure to trauma of the kind that produces brain damage or impairs development of the brain. And those are people who the Supreme Court has said are not the worst of the worst. And there were several cases last year in which people who were almost certainly innocent were executed. A number of other cases in which people were executed without DNA testing that they said would prove their innocence. So it appears that what's happened is the death penalty hasn't been reserved for the worst of the worst, which is, I think, the most powerful argument for the death penalty, if you are supporting it. It has instead been imposed in the cases in which there's been the worst of the worst legal process.
Michael on Facebook says, I support life without the possibility of parole. There have been too many people proved innocent later by DNA evidence. Senator Randolph, if you are against the death penalty, what is the alternative for the most heinous of crimes? Is it that life without the possibility of parole, or are there others?
And I was curious to know what Benjamin's reason for why he was supportive of the death penalty. But if, in fact, you're looking from a punishment aspect of it, when you give a person life without parole, that's a little bit more, much more hideous, in my opinion, than the death penalty. You've got a high rate in some areas of suicide. Why do you have a high rate of suicides? Because people just can't cope. They commit suicide. And then a lot of law enforcement authorities say, well, he took the easy way out because he committed suicide. So are you saying that if you support the death penalty, okay, you're saying that the person is taking the easy way out, which means what? No punishment. All right. So if you look at it from that standpoint of view, if in fact if there's an individual I'm thinking about who said he had spent 20 years in jail for an offense that he didn't commit, and it was the most harsh, excruciating experience you ever want to go through, and I don't want to deal with that again. So every day he felt the punishment. So if in fact you gave an individual for a crime life without parole, you're punishing me every day. So that in and of itself is punishment because each and every day he's being reminded of the crime that he's committed. But if you kill him because of the death penalty, then he's gone. He's not being punished at all.
We have another listener voicemail, this one from Suzanne, with her thoughts on the death penalty.
My name is Suzanne. I'm calling from Tell City, Indiana, and I do not believe we should continue having the death penalty in Indiana. It's against my beliefs as a Catholic, and as a human being, I do not believe we have a right to take another human being's life. Thank you.
Senator Randolph, do you have any plans to reintroduce this legislation to abolish the death penalty in Indiana?
The next session, during the budgetary year, because at that point we're going to be in session. We have what is called a biannual budget in Indiana every 2 years, and the budget is discussed during the odd years. The odd years is for 4 months. The even years are for 3 months. This year is an even session, so it's not that much time, and everybody's trying to get their bills in and try to get heard and get in and get out real quick. And normally elections are around that time as well. So next year I intend to try to introduce that again. And my efforts is try to slowly but surely, it's like a slow grind, getting your colleagues to see the insensitivity in terms of the death penalty. And if you can get one okay, one person supporting your position concerning abolishing the death penalty, then you've got another advocate that can be able to be out there like a foot soldier to help you out, convince the other colleagues. So that's my plan of action.
Director Dunham, Indiana, of course, just marked 10 years since our last execution. Of course, 10 years is just a number, but it's one that makes people think. 12 of the 29 states that still use the death penalty have gone more than a decade without executing anyone. What do we take from that? What does that mean?
Well, I think it's part of the overall trend we're seeing in the United States towards lesser use of the death penalty. I think that's part of the movement away from mass incarceration in general. The policies of the 1990s that most criminologists believe have been a failure and haven't produced a safer United States. I also think that it is only one of a series of important indicators. Executions tell us about the past. They are typically the cases they've gone through this lengthy appellate process. And many of the people who are being executed wouldn't even be sentenced to death if they were given a fair trial today. So I think the big number to look at is the new death sentences. And what we've seen in the United States and the Midwest and in Indiana is a huge drop in the number of new death sentences. We had more than 300 death sentences per year imposed in the United States for three consecutive years in the mid-1990s. We've had a 90% drop since then. This year, there were 34 new death sentences, and it was the fifth straight year in which there were 50 or fewer.
Director, we'll have to leave it at that. We'll pick up where we left off in the next segment. That was Executive Director of the Death Penalty Information Center, Robert Dunham, who we will keep around for the next segment. State Senator Lonnie Randolph will be leaving us. Thank you so much for your time today, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Today's show is about the death penalty in Indiana, which just marked 10 years since our last execution. Up next, we'll bring in a Hoosier whose transformation in the wake of personal tragedy inspired a foundation that calls for alternatives to capital punishment. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on the death penalty. In Indiana, last month, we marked 10 years since our last execution. We've gotten a lot of opinions this hour, as we expected, and we want to hear yours. Find us on Facebook or tweet us at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. We're back with Robert Dunham, Executive Director of the Death Penalty Information Center. And we are also now welcoming Bill Pelkey, founder of Journey of Hope, an organization that advocates for alternatives to the death penalty. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Matt.
I just want to start off with your story and how it led you to the foundation of Journey of Hope. Can you share that with us?
Sure. Well, it was May 14th of 1985, where four young girls gained access to my grandmother's house on the pretext of wanting to take Bible lessons. And one of the girls, a 15-year-old girl named Paula Cooper, was deemed to be the ringleader in my grandmother's death. And she was sentenced to die in the electric chair by the state of Indiana. At that time, Indiana's law said that anybody who was 10 years old or older committed that sort of crime could be charged as an adult, and that one of the penalties was available to an adult was a death penalty. And so she was the youngest person sentenced to die in an electric chair, youngest person on death row at that time.
And so the death penalty charges, though, were eventually dropped. Did you have something to do with that?
Well, I did get involved in an international campaign to help get her death sentence overturned, which in 1989, it was commuted to 60 years in prison. At that time, in Indiana, you could get out in halftime on good behavior. So basically, it was commuted to a 30-year sentence. That was as a result of the Indiana Supreme Court changing the law.
And at the time, your father actually called for the death penalty, and we heard Senator Randolph citing religious reasons in the last segment. Your father cited Bible references that seemed to support the death penalty. What made you what was that, and what made you think differently?
Well, my father's opponent found my grandmother's body. Of course, it was a terrible thing that he went through. In the courtroom during the sentencing hearing, he did present a list. They had about 30 Bible references. They were from the Old Testament that he said called for the death penalty. and said, in fact, he felt it would be a travesty of justice if she didn't get the death penalty.
And
at that time, I supported that decision at the time, but it was about a year and a half after my grandmother's death where I went through a transformation and my mind and heart were changed.
And you can actually mark the date of that transformation. When was that date?
It was November 2nd, 1986. It was a night where, during a period of spiritual reflection, I became convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that my grandmother had been appalled by the fact that this girl was on death row, that there was so much hate and anger towards her. It was obvious pain that the victim's family was going, that Paula Cooper's family was going through. I was convinced that my grandmother would have love and compassion for this girl and for this girl's family. I felt she wanted someone in my family to have that same sort of love and compassion. I didn't have any, but so convinced that's what she would have wanted. In a short prayer, I begged God to give me love and compassion for Paula Cooper and her family and do that on behalf of my grandmother. It was something I prayed in Jesus' name. And then I began thinking, well, I could write this girl a letter. I could share my grandmother's faith. And I realized that prayer of love and compassion had been answered, and I knew that I no longer want her to die. And I wanted to do whatever I could do to try to help her.
Director Dunham, we heard from State Senator Lonnie Randolph in the last segment that opinions are, I guess, heading south, heading the other direction, and fewer Americans are in support of the death penalty. Do opinion polls coincide with the senator's views?
They do. In the 1990s, a Gallup poll found that 80% of Americans said that they supported capital punishment. Over the last 3 years, when that question has been asked, the number is down to 55% or 56%. So we have what is essentially a 25 percentage point drop in support for the death penalty. But Americans' views on the death penalty are more nuanced than just a yes or no question. When you ask them the policy question, which do you think is the most appropriate way of dealing with murder cases, life without parole or death? This year, the Gallup poll found that 60% of Americans said that life without parole was the better approach. And that was remarkable because that's a significant swing in just the last 5 years. We're seeing this movement towards life. In the last 5 years, it's gone from 45% favoring life without parole to 60%. And that change has been apparent in every demographic group. Democrats, Republicans, independents, the young, the old, middle-aged. And one of the most remarkable things that we're seeing is that the youngest Americans are least supportive of capital punishment. And that suggests that this sea change in the view about capital punishment is something that's going to persist over time. It's beginning among the younger generation to be viewed as a punishment whose time has come and passed.
Bill Pelkey, now that we have sort of the short version of your story, I want to ask what perhaps the 56% of Americans who support the death penalty might ask you. What should be done with the most heinous of criminals, violent murderers, serial killers, child rapists, truly evil people who do exist and are unrepentant? If not the death penalty, then what?
Well, there are some people that should never be let out of prison as they presently exist, and so in those cases, I would say that life without the possibility of parole is an appropriate sentence.
And what about the argument, though, that these unrepentant killers simply need to be silenced? As long as they're alive and can communicate with the outside world, their story might inspire someone else to copycat their crimes.
Well, I mean, you know, we're human beings. My philosophy on life is that the answer is love and compassion for all humanity. And you cannot have love and compassion for all humanity and want to see anybody put into the death chamber when their life taken from them. And to say that there's no possibility for somebody to ever change, I believe is definitely wrong.
We have a new listener voicemail. This one is from Delilah with her thoughts on capital punishment.
Hi, my name is Delilah, and I'm from South Bend, Indiana. And my issue with the death penalty is more, or one of the issues that I have, is about taxes. And, you know, that my tax money would be going to support the death penalty. And many people have moral objections or religious objections to the death penalty, but they're still being asked to pay for it. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you, Delilah. And the moral objection, Director Dunham, seems to be one of the big reasons, and also one of the ones that's hardest to argue over when it comes to people who are pro-death penalty.
I think that's true. And from a moral perspective, there are some people who think that the death penalty is inherently immoral. There are others who think that from a moral perspective, it's the only justifiable response. And I think that's not something that you can there's no amount of facts that is going to dissuade somebody from their moral view one way or another on that particular issue. The moral point, though, is only the beginning of the death penalty discussion, because what we have here is a public policy. It may or may not be inherently justifiable or inherently unjustifiable, but we have to take a look at whether it is justifiable in the manner in which it's carried out. We now have 47 years of experience since the death penalty came back in the United States, and the evidence shows that it is applied with great geographic disparity. There's great economic disparities. There's very significant racial disparities in the way that it's carried out. And when you line up a list of cases in which the death penalty was imposed, and you line that up next to a list of cases in which the death penalty was not imposed, if I read the facts of typical cases on each of those lists, no one would be able to identify which came from what list. And so there's the question of the arbitrariness of it. So the question then becomes, is it justified as a matter of policy, or is it not just is it something that's inherently right or wrong? The other very, very important thing to think of is the rate at which we get it wrong. There have been 1,512 people who've been executed in the United States. There have now been 167 documented cases of innocent people, of people who were wrongly convicted and sentenced to death, who since have been exonerated. That is one exoneration for every nine executions. And is that a tolerable rate of error? That ties into the kind of moral judgment, because if you are running that kind of risk of executing somebody who is innocent, and there were almost certainly two innocent people executed last year, that changes whether you think the death penalty is morally a right thing.
We have a new listener voicemail, and we are talking about the death penalty in Indiana as we just marked 10 years without an execution. We are on with Robert Dunham, the executive director of the Death Penalty Information Center, as well as Bill Pelkey, founder of Journey of Hope, an organization that advocates for alternatives to the death penalty. The voicemail comes from a listener named Tony. Let's hear that now.
This is Tony. I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana, and I'm a therapist. I don't believe in the death penalty because most of the reasons why people kill has a psychological and emotional component to it. And a lot of times it has to do with how they were raised. That's it.
And Director Dunham, do you hear that cited as among the reasons why people might be against the death penalty?
Well, yes. And what's interesting is when you take a look, even in the most superficial sense, at murders, a murder is either in character or out of character. And if it's in character, then there are very serious questions about what caused the person to become the person that they were. If it's out of character, it's what is there about the circumstance that caused them to act in a way out of character, resulting in taking somebody's life. All of that has some kind of mental health component. And what we see is a huge percentage of people who are sentenced to death have significant evidence of mental illness, intellectual impairment, and as I mentioned earlier, have been victims of chronic severe childhood abuse. And so you've got kids with PTSD who tend to react in, well, they don't think about what they're doing in stressful situations. That's one of the reasons the death penalty is not a deterrent, because if you've got somebody who is impaired, they're not making the kinds of rational decisions that we tend to reserve the harshest punishments for. So that is one of the things that people talk about, that it is not the worst of the worst crimes that are resulting in death sentences and executions, but the most vulnerable of defendants who are being sentenced to death.
Bill Pelkey, would you characterize the your grandmother's killers in sort of the same way?
Yes, all four didn't come from normal families the way that they were, the way that they were raised. And I have also, when Paula Cooper was on death row, there were 33 people on death row, and studies showed that all 33 of them had been form of some, some form of child abuse. And at that time, the report also said about 90% of people on death row throughout the country. So that has a lot to do with it. Also, studies that say as much as 40% of people on death row had mental illness, and that explains a lot of it. And, we shouldn't be killing people that have mental illness. I mean, the Supreme Court has said that.
Director Dunham, let's look at some more numbers. How does Indiana compare first to the Midwest and then the rest of the country when it comes to the number of death sentences being handed down? We can't talk about the decline of the death penalty if just fewer executions are happening, but also sentences.
Well, there are no death sentences in Indiana since 2013. And that's part of the long-term trend that we've seen. Death sentences peaked in Indiana in the 1980s, in the mid-1980s. And so in 1985, the entire Midwest had 54 death sentences, and 10 of those were in Indiana. But overall, we now only have 8 people on Indiana's death row. There have only been 4 death sentences imposed in the state in the last decade. And as I said, since 2014. The trend in the Midwest is also the same. Nationwide, death sentences fell in half in the second half of this decade. There were only 6 death sentences in the entire Midwest in 2019, all of them in Ohio. And when we go back to the start of the decade, or in 2008, we're looking at 14 death sentences, and we're looking at four states that were imposing them. So we've seen the death penalty in terms of new death sentences disappearing from the Midwest, from most of the states, with possibly the exception of Ohio. Outside of Ohio, only 3 jury votes for death in the Midwest since 2014. It really is following the same national pattern where we saw a 90% decline over the past 20-some years.
But are there any exceptions to this decline in executions being carried out? We think of states like Texas, which far exceeds other states in sheer number of executions. Are they executing fewer inmates as well?
Yes. What's interesting is executions are becoming increasingly disproportionate. So historically, 80% of the executions have taken place in the South. In the recent years, it's been up as high as 90%. That shows that the death penalty is disappearing more in the other regions. So proportionally, it appears to be greater in the South. But the numbers themselves are actually down. Last year, Texas executed more people than any other state, but it executed 5 times fewer people than it had in the mid-1990s.
And so, let's see, then what do Americans say, I guess, the majority of Americans? Are there other options for the right punishment for the most heinous of crimes other than life without parole? What else is on that list?
There are different possibilities. There's the death penalty. There is life without possibility of parole with restitution. There's life without possibility of parole by itself. There is life with possibility of parole after a long term of years. In some states, it used to be 50 years, others 40, others 30. And then there is a maximum term of years. So you could say 40 years or 50 years as the maximum punishment. And one of the things that's really interesting, and it tells us something about the nuance in American thought about the death penalty, is when you just ask, do you support the death penalty or life without parole? We're seeing more Americans saying life without parole. When you then expand that to to say, let's have another option where there is a parolable sentence after a long time, we find support for the death penalty drops even more.
That's the Executive Director of Death Penalty Information Center, Robert Dunham. Thank you for your time this hour.
My pleasure.
Journey of Hope founder Bill Pelkey is on with us as well. Thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you.
And for more stats on the death penalty, you can visit the Death Penalty Information Center's website at deathpenaltyinfo.org. Our producers are Drew Dahlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Thank you to Adam Gross for our technical engineering. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. Thanks for listening. This is All In.